This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Yeah, if you want to trade 3, 4, and 5 just to get another second or something.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Sorry, spat out a cat.
What? You what?
I got up to grab my drink. My cat jumped in my chair.
Is the cat okay?
And she ran off. So I'm assuming she's okay.
What's the cat's name?
That was Izzy.
What? That was Izzy.
That was Izzy, yeah.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, filling in tonight for Josh Briscoe alongside Rudy Salazar. What a great line, right? I had never heard that before. That's fantastic.
Matt has, out of all our guests, Matt probably has like the best rotation of liners. Honestly, it's him and Matt Verderam. So two Matts. The Matts bring us the best liners by far.
There you go. I trust it. After what I was dying laughing before we just went on the air. But we are joined now by Matt Derrick of ChiefsDigest.com. Matt, thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Absolutely, Jack. And I have Izzy right here next to me, as a matter of fact. She has her own chair in the office now. So, you know, she doesn't have to jump into my chair, although she still does.
Well, hopefully for her safety tonight, she knows not to hop back in your chair. But it is finally, again, game week for the Kansas City Chiefs. They'll take on the Denver Broncos Sunday night. We did hear today, or in the last couple of days, I want to start off with Lucas Niang, who Andy Reid mentioned there's a chance that he will play. Do you get a feeling that maybe we'll see Lucas Niang back in the starting lineup, or is it more of just wishful thinking?
No, I think when he's ready to play, I think he'll be back in the starting lineup. So I think we'll get a pretty good feel for it on Wednesday, you know, what kind of a level of participant he is in practice. If he's back as a full go, I think he will be ready. I mean, even though I think that Andrew Wiley has done a pretty good job filling in, I still think, all things being equal, and this is assuming, you know, hey, Mike Remmers is not going to be back for a little while, I think Lucas Niang is back. When Remmers is back, let's see what happens. But I think when healthy, that's Lucas Niang's job for now.
And I know Kyle Long was also added to the 53-man roster. I mean, how quickly was he progressing, and is he completely 100% healthy?
Yeah, he's. I think that the indication they put him back on the 53 is that he's 100% football healthy. Now, ready to play, that's a whole other matter because, you know, he's had a chance to get back and get into the groove the last 3 weeks, really the last two because, you know, obviously didn't get to work out during the bye week. But he had a lengthy layoff. That was it's a tough injury to come back from, especially for an offensive lineman. I mean, it's essentially a fracture in the kneecap area, the tibial plateau fracture. It's a tough one to come back from. And I think right now what the Chiefs were hoping all along was that, hey, midseason replacement, Kyle Long can come back and give them some just relief on the bench and extend that offensive line. They're not expecting him to come in and be a starter. I mean, hey, you know, Trey Smith has nailed down that right guard spot, so you don't need that. And, hey, can Kyle Long play tackle in a pinch? Sure. But remember, he hasn't played right tackle in 6 years in an NFL game. So that's not what he's here for. I mean, at this point, what you're getting for your money with Kyle Long is a veteran that can come up off the bench if needed and spell someone that goes down in an injury. But that's going to be mostly at guard, I think, would be where he would be first up, not at tackle. I think they've got other options there for now.
And I know this offensive line has had some very good games. They've also had some not very good games. I guess overall, through these 11 games, what has been your takeaway, your evaluation of this Kansas City Chiefs offensive line?
I mean, I think it's been kind of what we expected, a work in progress. And the question was just going to be how long it was going to take before this whole unit kind of started gelling together. And I think the optimistic hope was that, hey, maybe 4 weeks in, this group will kind of get locked in. They'll get to know each other. They'll kind of figure it all out. I think it took longer than that. And in a lot of ways, they're still kind of figuring out the chemistry on that line. And certainly the chemistry with Mahomes and just what kind of pocket that he likes. I think you've seen a lot more comfort with it in the last month than we saw early in the season. So I think they're getting there. I mean, is it 100%? No. I mean, they've still got some work to do. But I think Orlando Brown has been a lot more comfortable on that left side the last few games. I think the rookies have continued to grow. Joe Tooney has just kind of always been a machine in there since day one. And right tackle has been where they've had the rotation and the injuries. But I feel like that, hey, Andrew Wiley's given them some good snaps and good reps over the last couple of games. And Niang has been progressing. When Rimmers came in, he was solid. So I feel like that they're getting there. But all along, I mean, you always knew that, hey, year one was going to have some rough moments for that offensive line.
We're talking with Matt Derrick of ChiefsDigest.com. They will be taking on a Denver Broncos team this week that is 6-5. They're coming off a win against the Los Angeles Chargers. It'll be a battle for first place in the AFC West on Sunday night. But they don't really feel like a team that is right there ready for first place. Is this a Denver Broncos team that is legitimately scary, or are they just playing well at the right time?
Yeah, that's a really good way to question it, because I'm kind of in that area with maybe it's just the team that's had a couple of good games here in the last month, because, you know, this looks for all intents and purposes like a 500 team. And they've had, you know, two obviously good wins in the last three games with the wins over the Cowboys and the Chargers. But then they've got that stinker to the Eagles in between. So, and that was coming off a four-game losing streak. So, I mean, I still feel like that this Broncos team is probably more in that 8-9, more likely than 9-8 kind of team. Statistically, they look like a 500 team. The only area where they don't is with points scored. I mean, they've done a good job of keeping teams out of the end zone. But other than that, they've got a pretty average offense. Their defensive numbers are actually pretty average, too. They've got a great secondary, but, you know, they're flawed. I mean, they're not – I don't think that – even though they're playing for first place in the AFC West, I don't think they're a divisional champion quite yet. And I'm not quite sure they're a playoff team either. I mean, maybe they sneak in at 500-ish, but I don't think that they're quite there.
Now, on the flip side of that, I always thought the Chargers were the true threat to Kansas City in the AFC West. They had first place for a little bit this season. I still kind of consider them that. But why is it now that they just aren't winning those games that are not necessarily gimme games, but they are tough ones? Why are they slipping so much now in the middle part of the season?
Yeah, I think we would probably feel completely differently about this Chargers team if they had just, you know, dropped one of those early games. I mean, between the Chiefs, Raiders, and Browns that they played there in weeks 3, 4, and 5, I mean, those were all games. I mean, you know, they really pounded the Browns, but they could have lost to the Chiefs easily. And the Chiefs played a terrible game against the Chargers. Chargers should have put the Chiefs away by double digits with, you know, being +4 in turnovers. They absolutely should have run away in that game. So I kind of feel like in retrospect, we probably should have seen that the veneer of the Chargers wasn't for real, that they really were. I mean, even though I'm with you, I mean, I think that they've got the elements to be the best of the rest in the AFC West, but I'm still not sure that they're on the talent level of Chiefs right now. And I think we're maybe just kind of seeing them come back to the pack. I mean, maybe just come back to life, to reality a little bit. You know, getting off to that hot start probably wasn't the real Chargers team.
We're talking with Matt Derrick, beat writer for ChiefsDigest.com. When you look at the remaining schedule for the Kansas City Chiefs, in your eyes, what is the toughest remaining game?
I mean, despite what I just said about the Chargers, I mean, it's that game. Just to me, for no other reason than you're going to the West Coast on a Thursday night. That is one of the most difficult things to do in the NFL, is just to go in another time zone on short rest. Against a decent team. I mean, it would be different, I think, if the Chargers were a little bit tougher. But, I mean, they've got one win over you already, so there's you got to consider that. But to me, that's the toughest game left. I mean, if the Chiefs win that game, I don't see why they can't run the table. I mean, especially if they manage to take care of business against the Broncos and the Raiders. If they go 3-0 in the next three games, you're looking at those final three. I mean, the Bengals is the only other game that worries me. And the Bengals are an enigma, too. I mean, they could come into Kansas City and put up 48 points, and they could also come in here and get beat by 37. I mean, the Bengals are just like every other team in the AFC. I mean, they've got some really good weapons for the future. And, I mean, I think they've got the core to be a really good team, but they're not ready yet. And, you know, you kind of see it in the results this year. They've got some really nice wins, but they also have some very head-scratching losses.
And before you brought up Cincinnati, I was actually going to go to that game and ask you about it. Can it sometimes make a team scarier, though, when they could get blown out by 30 or they could beat you by 30?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always going to be scared about any team that's got, you know, ability to put up 40 points in a game. And the Bengals have that. I mean, they've got the offense that when it's cooking on a certain day, they can absolutely, you know, put points on anybody. And they haven't really had trouble this year. I mean, you know, what I think the lowest point scored this season has been 16, 17 points. Other than that, they've, you know, been 20 to 40 every single week. I mean, they've been pretty steady. The defense, I think, is going to get there. They've had some up and down moments. And consistency is just their biggest problem. And that's to expect with, a young team like that. But, yeah, to me, it's a team that's got that kind of variance that you just don't know what they're going to get. That makes them scary because you get them on the wrong day and they can steamroll you.
Now, we have talked about the Chargers. We've talked about the Broncos. Just how serious should we take the Raiders after their win in Dallas on Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I still can't quite be sure what to make of that. I mean, I certainly thought the Raiders had no chance going into Dallas. And maybe it's just simply that, you know, the Cowboys have kind of run out of steam the last four games, at least last three or four games. The Broncos, you know, they kind of exposed some things. And, I mean, the Broncos caught the Cowboys when the Cowboys were fully stacked still. And they kind of showed some ways to hold down that Cowboys offense that some teams have been able to go to school on. So I think that's part of it. You know, injuries have been an issue. So certainly the Raiders weren't beating the Cowboys at their peak. But I think after what the Chiefs did to the Raiders in Las Vegas coming to Arrowhead, I don't think that's going to make it any easier. I mean, maybe the Raiders will want to have another trip around the parking lot and bus. But I think the Chiefs are a better team. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I think they're the better team, and I expect them to win that game.
We're talking with Matt Derrick of ChiefsDigest.com. Last question for you here, Matt. With it being Broncos week, what has been your all-time favorite Broncos game that you've covered?
That I have covered? That would be, and I think it was 2016, because I think it was my first game in Denver. And that season, I was writing for the Topeka Capital Journal. So we had like a, you know, well, I guess it would have been 10:15 deadline for the paper. So it was like 9:15, I guess, in Denver. And that was the game that goes into overtime. I think Cairo Santos, you know, ended up booting that field goal off the goalpost that either win the game or put it into overtime. But I just remember I had a deadline at 10:15, and the game wasn't over at 10:15. And so my editor, this is, you know, this is my first season back in journalism, you know, after it hasn't been in PR for a while. So I was still a little rusty at some things, but I had to end up filing three versions of my game story at the deadline because I didn't know what was going to happen. One was where the Chiefs won, one was where the Chiefs lost, and one was where they just put it in the paper. They didn't know the score yet. And the funny thing is that I think the editors ended up taking my version where they didn't know the score yet and just plugged in the score. So I guess that was my best story.
Okay, so I know I said one more question, but I got to ask one more. So we know your favorite game as a journalist. What is your favorite all-time Chiefs-Broncos matchup?
Yeah, the one that always stands out to me is I was in college for the Monday Night Miracle, the Mile High Miracle with Joe Montana hitting Willie Davis in the corner of the end zone. And I was in my dorm room, Wolpers Hall, at the University of Missouri. And I'm in my dorm room with a bunch of my buddies and everything watching the game. It was kind of a nice fall evening, so I had the window open. And right across from, you know, Wolpers was the men's dorm. And then the all-women's dorm, Johnston Hall, was right across from us. And when Willie Davis got into the end zone and scored that touchdown, I mean, everybody in my room erupted. But everyone on campus erupted. And I look out the window, and I mean, I can see, you know, across the courtyard. You can just see people over in Johnson Hall in the women's dorm all jumping up and down and celebrating. I mean, the entire campus just went crazy when the Chiefs won that game because they'd finally beaten John Elway and Joe Montana got it done. That was like the marquee Denver moment, at least for me, watching the Chiefs.
Were you wearing a jersey at that time? Any jersey you remember that you were wearing that night?
I don't remember for sure. I know I had like a – it was probably after that season, I think I got this on a special – you know, holiday sale at Gear for Sports, like a 1994 AFC West Champions winter coat. And I wore that one for quite a few years after that. And I think I had like a AFC West champion sweatshirt. So that was probably 94. So I probably didn't have any, I don't know that I had any Chiefs gear on that night, but I had some after that.
All right. Well, Matt, thanks so much for your time tonight and enjoy the week.
Absolutely, Jack. Take care, my friend.
That was Matt Derrick, beat writer for ChiefsDigest.com. When we come back here on Almost Entirely Sports, we'll talk some Royals baseball right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
My favorite memory of the last of this last run of Royals players is every time this year that I said they're going to be a 500 team, and then everyone yelled at me.
Of course you make it about you.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, filling in for Josh Briscoe tonight alongside Rudy Salazar. We are going to be talking some Royals baseball for the next 20 minutes or so. And where the outlook is of this team right now in the offseason. They're not the organization right now putting in $556 million like the Texas Rangers are. And it's likely that they're not going to make a deal anywhere close to that this offseason. The only thing I can say with certainty is that they're probably going to add 2 to 3 guys for that bullpen. But we know right now they feel they can get cheap bullpen options that can produce for you. Look at Domingo Tapia and Joel Piamps this season. They found them midseason and are some of their better bullpen guys in September. Dylan Coleman was a guy you had in September call-ups. Throws 100 miles an hour. Great slider. He's going to be somebody that probably is in the mix for that bullpen. Scott Barlow, still there. Josh Staumont, still there. I think they are going to be looking for a left-handed reliever. They non-tendered Richard Lovelady today. So he was a guy that would have been in the running for it. But now not on the roster anymore. So they're probably going to go through free agency a guy or two to piece in there. Maybe through the rotation, somebody's got to be the odd man out. You got Brady Singer. You got Chris Bubich. Mike Minor, for what you're paying him, probably has to get starts to begin the year. Will Jackson Coar, after his really bad rookie season, get another shot? Probably at some point, but if not, he's going to slide into that bullpen role. Daniel Lynch, you know he's probably going to be in the rotation. Carlos Hernandez, another guy you could plug in there. So there are multiple pitchers on this team that are going to need to be on the roster, which is why when you look around at all these teams making moves, they have the flexibility to do that. They are trying to plug in guys immediately because they don't got anybody they can play behind them. Right? The Rangers went out and got Marcus Semien as their shortstop because there wasn't really anybody there that couldn't be moved elsewhere. They got Corey Seager because they wanted to have those two guys in the lineup. And John Gray for that rotation. And not a very good rotation, but now they got their ace. That's $556 million for three guys. The Royals are smart not to be doing that right now. Because when you look around, let's go outside this pitching staff. Third base. You could probably plug in Hunter Dozier there. Maybe Bobby Witt Jr. if you call him up at the beginning of the year. Because Nicky Lopez is at short. Maybe Whit Merrifield's at second. Adalberto Mondesi can play third, short, or second. Carlos Santana's got first base until Nick Prado is the guy that comes up and mans that spot. Perez is obviously your catcher. Benintendi in left. Michael A. Taylor, you extended him. He's in center. Right field would be the only option I say, okay, you could upgrade there. But you extended Hunter Dozier. So if you're going to give up on Hunter Dozier after one season, then that contract is terrible.
You extended him for 4 years to be a backup bench bat. That's not what you want out of Hunter Dozier. Now, he got much better in the second half, but his first half, that's not that high of a bar. He was arguably one of the worst hitters in baseball the first half. But he improved. He was banged up in the first half, so you know the Royals want to give him another shot, at least starting in spring training. So I think Hunter Dozier is this team's right fielder on opening day. Kyle Isbell is a guy that probably will be in the mix for right, center, and left field. But if you want a guy like Bobby Witt Jr. to be on the team, you can't go spend $120 million for a third baseman, because Nicky Lopez has earned it to be your shortstop. He was the best defensive shortstop in baseball, even though he wasn't a Gold Glove finalist. By every metric, it felt like defensively, Nicky Lopez had earned that Gold Glove opportunity. Whit Merrifield, another guy that was up for a Gold Glove. You're not moving Whit Merrifield out of the lineup. Adalberto Mondesi still needs at-bats because he's got so much talent. So really, the only spot you could make an upgrade would be right field. But that means you're moving Hunter Dozier to the bench and you're paying him some amount of money for the next 3 years. I think next year would be the year that maybe the Royals make a splash like that. Because of the Tigers right now, they go out and get Javi Baez to be their everyday shortstop for 6 years north of $120 million. That's what you got to do in today's game. There are no more 3-year, $30 million deals that feel like a lot. No, you got to spend a lot of money for a lot of years. So eventually, when the Royals get to that spot of true contention, they're going to make a move like that. But I believe they probably want to see what they have and their prospects before they make a move like that. Just go back to 2011, 2012. They needed to see first what Hosmer, Moustakas, Escobar, Kane, Perez, all those guys could do before they could go make a trade for James Shields and Wade Davis and then go get a guy. I know he didn't end up being the contract they wanted, but the Royals went out and got Omar Infante, who they saw a lot of in Detroit, to be their everyday second baseman. That was a big contract. They went and traded for a guy like Nori Aoki in 2014. So when you go out and make those moves, you're trying to piece together here and there where they can boost the play of your core guys. The core guys, I don't think, are here yet in Kansas City. I think the guys that are here are more resemblant of the Alex Gordon, Billy Butler guys that were there through the tough times, and they'll be there the next time they're competing for a playoff spot. But the core group of guys are the Bobby Witt Jr.'s, the MJ Melendez, the Nick Prado, the Vinny Pasquantino. Those are your guys, and then also pair them together with that pitching staff. That's the core. And you have to build around that to be a true contender. I think if the Royals were to go all in right now in free agency, it would be a misstep. It would be evaluating your team incorrectly. Right now, they need to get back to competitiveness. They did a little bit last year, but when you can really compete to be over 500, you're in it for, let's say, until August, maybe early September. That, I think, should be the goal next season. If you're playing for a wild card spot in September, that's a fun year of baseball. You were 74-88 last year. So getting to that next step is seeing what you got in these prospects. Okay, then get over 500. That should be goal number two, and then be in contention for maybe a wild card spot in September. The Rangers lost 100-plus games last year. And like I said, $556 million on three guys. Think about the other guys on the team. Can two guys or three guys make the Rangers a 90-win team? No. They still don't have the bullpen. They still don't have the rotation. They still don't have the pieces around those guys. But credit to them. Credit to former Royals pitcher Chris Young, who's the GM, they had to make that play if they were going to get those players. Those players, that was their asking price, and they weren't budging on it. So if they wanted them, they have to pay them. But it's all about evaluating your team correctly. If you do it incorrectly, then 4 or 5 years down the line, you're really hurting because you're limited financially. And the Royals understand the next time that they're going to be a contender, They want to be good for a while. We all love the 2013, 2014, 2015, and a little bit of 2016 and 17 years. Right? But more importantly, it was always the 14 and 15 years. The problem was, after 2015, they didn't make the postseason. Their window closed immediately. Right? And when it did, that's when you got to start the rebuild a lot quicker. And I guess now baseball is just more aggressive. Teams don't want to rebuild as long. Like the Orioles right now are setting themselves up for, it feels like, a decade-long rebuild. They have not done much in the last couple of years to indicate they've improved. Texas started losing a lot of games. They're playing in a big stadium. They need to fill it. They need to have a lot of fans. They need to have reasons to go out to the game. Marcus Semien, Corey Seager, and John Gray would do that. The problem is that doesn't always equate to wins. I think one of the... It's not exactly similar, because I don't think the players are anywhere near the same. But go back to that 2011-2012 year when the Los Angeles Angels went out and had those mega deals with Josh Hamilton and Albert Pujols. In the end, those deals didn't work out. And Albert Pujols was a liability at the very end of his career in L.A. I mean, he was a liability the last 3 years he was in L.A., maybe longer. And he's still a great. He's still a Hall of Famer. But it's when you give those 8, 9, 10-year deals to 30-year-old guys, you're not really thinking about what they're going to be like when they're 35, 36. You're really thinking of, here's where they are, 30 to 33, in that age range. What can we get out of them those first 3 years? Because then we're going to try to build around them. The problem is you're not going to be putting Marcus Semien at shortstop every single day when he's 37 and you're paying him all that money. You may have to, but he's not going to be anywhere near the player he was 6, 7 years ago. And that's just baseball now. That really is just baseball. Guys always are getting these 8, 9-year contracts for over $300 million. So I don't know if I really want to fault teams for making the deals. I can maybe fault them for evaluating their team incorrectly. But if you want the big stars, sometimes that's always going to be the asking price. So next offseason, depending where the Royals are, they're going to have to, if they want a star, a big-name pitcher, it's not going to be those 2, 3-year deals anymore. It's going to be a lot of years for a lot of money. Now, they'll better your team if the surrounding players around that star player are good. Then you can make a true run in the postseason. That's like with the White Sox. When they had their guys like Luis Robert, they had Eloy Jimenez, Tim Anderson. You had those three guys, that young group of guys. Now, they had slowly went up through those years where they were losing. But then last year, when they knew they had just enough pieces, they made huge splashes. You got Dallas Keuchel. You got Lance Lynn. You go out and get those big bats. You extend Jose Abreu. Right? And when you're making those moves, you're being aggressive. It's because you trust the core group of guys you have now. The Royals are still building that. When I look at Texas, I don't really know who's the core group of guys, if they're even there yet. And that's where deals like this could hurt you 5, 6 years down the line. I mean, Rudy, when you look at free agency right now, the hot stove, how hot it really has been. Are you, I would say, content with what the Royals have done, or are you a little bit disappointed that they haven't been in on really anybody?
I don't know if I'm disappointed in any. Part of this is just knowing, like, the Royals are just never... some of this is some players have gotten much bigger deals than I thought, right? Like, Robbie Ray, like, is really good. I wasn't fully expecting that. The Royals are just never going to be in on deals like that, right? Like Max Scherzer, Royals just aren't in on those plays. Like that's the type of money. Royals don't have Rangers money. It's just the reality of the situation. I would like for them to add a top of the line, and by top of the line, I just mean somebody who can slot in as one of your better starting pitchers. He doesn't necessarily have to be a true ace as compared to the rest of baseball. But, like, somebody who is kind of your guy. Like, I like Marcus Stroman a lot. I don't know what ultimately he's going to sign for. I'd be pretty thrilled to have him. I'd like another kind of more back into the bullpen guy. I would like to see the Royals get one of those two this offseason. with a large part of that still, though, being about building for the future, right? You know, knowing that year one of said guy you sign is not the year that you're really going for. Because I agree with you. This year is about the rest of the group getting up. We've seen the pitchers get up. This year is about the rest of those guys, right? It's about Bobby Witt getting up. It's about Nick Prado coming up. It's about MJ Melendez coming up. It's about seeing what you have in those guys and then figuring out, okay, specifically, these are the holes we need to fill. I think just in general, having a back end of the bullpen guy or another, especially veteran top of the rotation guy, just kind of helps, right? Like James Shields was not a great pitcher by any means, but he helped solidify the rotation just because you knew this guy was going to be there. Wade Davis and that whole bullpen were amazing. Part of the reason why they were amazing was because you just knew the guy was there. I think especially when you have a young pitching staff, having one of those guys can just kind of help everybody else, especially with the starters, as young as they are. I think getting one of those veterans, like true guys, can just kind of help everybody else almost relax a little bit, can help their development. Doesn't have to happen this offseason, though. Because, again, I think this upcoming year is probably the last year where wins don't really matter. I want them to be competitive. I want them to win. But I'm not looking so much at win and loss to determine success. I think, you know, again, a veteran starting pitcher, I think, could help the development of the other guys. But I would just like to see them go get a guy. It doesn't have to be free agency. Maybe it's a trade. The reality is the Royals have a logjam in a handful of spots. Trading some of those guys might not be the worst idea in the world, right? Like, I hated when they traded Will Myers. Wade Davis helped them win a World Series. Sometimes you just have to do that. I do not want them to trade MJ Melendez. I really, really don't want that to happen. But depending on how it goes, right? Like, Salvi looks like he's going to be just fine catching for a while. Now, I think MJ Melendez is athletic enough to play right field and DH, and then also just give Salvi more days off catching. But maybe that's how you go get your guy, right? Maybe you go get your – Tampa Bay is always trading guys so early. Tampa Bay has got some next young starting pitcher, you know, 26, 27-year-old amazing starting pitcher who's got a couple years left, and you make a trade there. So you don't have to do it now by any means, but I would like to see them add somebody. Probably more realistically, it's probably more bullpen-related, because if you can't get a true – again, at this point, it's probably just Marcus Stroman. If you can't get Marcus Stroman – you might as well just roll with what you got.
Yeah, right now what I'm looking at, it looks like Spot Rack over there. Marcus Stroman's market value is a little bit over $21 million. So probably a little bit too much. He'd be your number one ace for multiple years.
It's more than likely. Like, I would love him just because he is a ground ball pitcher, and the Royals' defense looks like, especially on that infield, it just looks like it's going to be full Gold Glove.
He can put up career numbers in Kansas City.
But he is likely going. I expect him to essentially outprice that market to outprice. Now maybe because some of this other money has been thrown around at some other players that the market just dries up for him a little bit. My guess is that doesn't happen. But also, like, you know, I didn't think Eduardo Rodriguez was going to get almost $80 million, right? I think the Rangers were going to spend over $500 million. So like, there's a lot of things I don't know about baseball free agency. I thought things were going to be pretty slow until the CBA was figured out. I was wrong. Everybody was like, we got to get all these deals in before the CBA is up.
Exactly. That's exactly why it's been so hot. The stove has been so hot. It's because before, with the CBA, everybody's saying, I got to sign now. I got to get my money now. And that's why maybe the market value is so high. But when you look at some of these other guys, like bullpen guys, okay, Kenley Jansen, one of the most well-known closers around baseball, his market value is a little bit over $10 million. I mean, if you got Kenley Jansen, who's 34, on a two-year, $20 million deal to be your closer, I'm not saying the Royals will do that, but that's a deal I'd absolutely do. The Royals don't have a closer, and he's a very established closer. And if you only had to pay $10 million for a closer per year, yeah, you may misjudge that you don't want to overpay a bullpen guy, because if you're not winning a lot of games, having a closer is pretty much pointless. But if you feel confident that you can win a little bit this year, having a reliable closer is very important. So that $8 to $10 million range, that's what I do for a pitcher. If you're paying north of $20 million a year, I just don't know how worth it that'd be when I look at this team and I go, it's not a wild card or division title year or bust. I think next year, as you kind of pointed out, that's the last year they can really say, all right, well, if they don't make the postseason – that's all right, we're still rebuilding. No, this is like the last year where they really got to show signs of improvement. Next year's got to be boom right off the bat. They're competing, and they're looking good.
Because after this season, everybody's essentially up, right? There'll be a couple other pieces here and there, right? Some guys who fill out the roster, some guys who surprise us. But the majority of that core is going to be there, right? Like, the rotation, essentially, the core rotation is essentially there. The core position players, they're all going to either start the year off in AAA or the big leagues. By May, you're going to see Bobby Witt. You're going to see Nick Prado. You're going to see MJ Melendez. Like, those guys are just – you're going to see Kyle Isbell. Those guys are just going to be in the big leagues full-time come May. Like, that's just – you know, that's just the reality of the situation unless, God forbid, any one of them gets hurt. Don't want any of that to happen. But
no, of course not. But it's just – yeah, you get – usually in baseball, it's a tough business, right? If you got that top prospect status – you got like 2 years to show that you really are a top prospect. Other guys, it's a way different story. They can ease their way into the big leagues. But if you're a top 10 prospect in baseball, there's a lot of them out there that hit the ground running, and they're off. They're already leading the league in multiple categories. So hopefully the Royals next year, that's where they know this is our year to contend. When we come back here on Almost Entirely Sports, we'll finish up with some over-under right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
We have 18 minutes left, and we haven't actually talked about anything.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, filling in for Josh tonight alongside Rudy Salazar. Man, 3 hours. That is a very long radio show. We've now been on for 2 hours and 45 minutes. I know there's been breaks in between, but you know what? It's been fun. It's been fun. It's been a long day, but this has been very fun doing this here with you, Rudy. I think my favorite part of the show so far was either the Christmas list, to be honest, Matt Derrick. Hearing that Matt Derrick line was perhaps the best. That might have been the highlight. And then, of course, the basketball movies starting five.
Matt Derrick's always, he's got a lot. We got a liner of him, I guess, R-ing like a pirate, you know, for Pirate Day. Like, we got a lot of good Matt Derrick liners.
I mean, he was great.
He's a treat.
He was fantastic. But that line was top-notch. A-plus quality there on that liner. Before we finish up tonight, we're going to have some over-under. Rudy will read them to me just specifically for this Chiefs second half. So, Rudy, fire away.
First over-under is games where the Chiefs score over 30 points. Over, the number is set at 3.5.
So, there's 6 games left. So, if that were to be true, yeah, that'd be... even going 4 of the 6 games over 30, they got Denver and Vegas next, both at home. Maybe one of those is over 30. I feel like the Denver game, the defense is too good with Denver. I don't see them scoring over 30. Pittsburgh, their defense is still pretty good. I think that'll be a lopsided game, but I think having anything over 4 or 3.5 games with over 30 points is a lot. So I'm going to take the under on that right now.
Yeah, with the way the offense is still, they're getting better, but they're still clearly working through things. And so to assume that in 4 of the 6, like I think they'll have plenty, like they'll be fine, right? They may score a lot of 25 to 29 in that range, but it's not 30. So, yeah. I'm with you on the end.
30's a lot.
It is. And normally for the Chiefs offense, it's not, but for this year, it is.
This season, yeah, it definitely feels like it.
All right, next one. Games won. This is for just ultimately what they will finish with. The number set at 10.5.
Okay, so 10.5, they're already at 7. This has to be way over. I mean, I feel like this team is probably destined for 12-5. I feel like there's only going to be one loss on the back half of the schedule. But when we were talking with Matt Derrick, he mentioned if they win these first 3, right? They beat the Broncos, the Raiders, and the Chargers. He thinks they could run the table. So go undefeated from that point. The only other game on that schedule is Cincinnati, where I really go, that's tough. I know Denver, it's tough to win in Mile High, but if the Chiefs have already won 5 in a row after the bye week, I feel confident going into Mile High. So I'm going to take the over on this simply because I don't see them having that bad of a second half. I see them having a very good second half. I'm going to lock in probably 12-5, but I'll agree with Matt Derrick. If they win the first 3, why can't they win the rest of their games?
Yeah, to get the over, they only, you know, they just need to at least go 4-2. And I think 4-2 is I'd be willing to lock that in pretty easily. My guess is they will slip up somewhere, and some of that is just, again, this team still clearly has some issues. So my guess is there's going to be a frustrating loss at some point. And it might just be going to L.A. because, again, anytime you have to go on the road on a short week, even when you play bad teams, it's likely you will lose because that's just such a hard – those games are hard to win. Now, it's Chargers. Chargers like to do Charger things, and so that probably offsets it, and it's just like a normal road game. But, yeah, I think they'll very easily get at least 4 wins. I think 5 is where they're going to be at. Next, over-under – turnovers forced for the rest of the year. The number set at 10.5. So 10.5 turnovers. Well, the defense forced 10.5 turnovers the rest of the year.
Okay, so again, there's 6 games left. If they were to force over 10.5, you're looking at like 2 turnovers a game, roughly. I know a little bit under.
It's probably
like
1.75 technically, but you obviously can't have that. And it's you have to have more. So you have to have a handful of games with 2, obviously, in there.
I know they've gotten better defensively, and they've gotten better turning the ball over a little bit. Still, 2 turnovers forced a game is a lot. All I really care about for the Chiefs' defense is that they are limiting teams scoring. I don't care how they do it. If they hold them to 20, anything under 20, I'll take it. Right? If they're not forcing any turnovers, they have penalties, but they're holding them under 20, that's doing their job. So I think with that being said, it's got to be under. I got to take the under. Having almost 2 turnovers a game feels like a lot for this defense.
Yeah, we just kind of keep being on the same page. I'm with you. It's just not a defense that really forces turnovers right now. Like, it's a very, very good secondary. I really like this Chiefs secondary, especially the way he's playing right now. Snead makes plays. He hasn't picked off passes necessarily, you know, like he did early last year. He is a playmaker, but they are playmakers that aren't necessarily turning the ball over, right? Like Chris Jones had an amazing game, and the defensive line looks like it's getting going, not necessarily causing turnovers. I really like the way this defense is developing, and I think now that they've just kind of finally accepted that we need our young guys who are fast on the field, you're seeing that growth, seeing Chris Jones move back to the inside. You are seeing, I think, this defense get to its best. You're reaching its peak, reaching its potential, and I think its peak is a very good defense, just not a turnover making defense. I think they're playmakers, but not so much in the turnover department as much as they whoever's got the ball in their hand, they're just flying to them right now and just drilling guys. Next, over under, we got playoff games the Chiefs will play in this year set at 1.5. Are they 1 and done?
I gotta feel like this team, if they even finish 5-1 on this back half, they're going to set themselves up nicely to have a home game. The old Chiefs teams, I would probably be a little bit hesitant because I don't want to curse them. But we've seen under Patrick Mahomes, he's yet to play a road playoff game. I don't see them being 1 and done at all. So I feel like I got to take the over on this. And who knows what happens in the postseason. Right now, the AFC is so wide open. The wild card team on the road could run the table and get to the Super Bowl. But the Chiefs right now, I feel like at least they are looking like a team that can get to the AFC title game once again. Now, I'm excited to see what they look like in the second half of their schedule, but I feel like right now I'd take the over on that 1.5 for playoff games because whoever they get in the first round, whether it be like a Cincinnati or the Chargers would be a scary one a third time around playing an AFC West team, but you're playing at home. It's a playoff game. You have Patrick Mahomes. You got Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill. If the defense is playing better, I like the chances. So I got to take the over right now in playoff games at 1.5.
Now, if the Chiefs get that first round bye, does that count as 1?
That's a good question.
Do they go in? Because, again, the first round bye is still in play. Now, I want to say, like if it was any of the last like 2-3 years, it's clearly, they're gonna be over. Of course, they're not going to be 1 and done. This feels like it could be a year where the Chiefs somehow rebound to the 1 seed and then lose their first game. But I can't pick them to do it. Just until I see I've seen this team playing 3 straight AFC championship games. At some point they won't be there. But it's just until I see it happen, I'm just always going to think that eventually they're going to figure it out this year. I just keep feeling like at some point the offense will get it going. It's going to click. They're going to get things figured out and they're going to roll. So I will also go with the over. Last one is Pro Bowl players for the Chiefs this year set at 5.5.
Okay, so let me think about this one. You'd have Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Chris Jones. I'm assuming some of the linemen, too. I think Joe Tooney, Creed Humphrey, maybe Trey Smith. Well, there's six right there, so I think I'd take the over. I feel like that'd be a little bit higher. Do you think Tyrann Mathieu will get a Pro Bowl invite?
Yeah, Mike, I'll just say, I'm going to go with the over because regardless of how the Chiefs have played, they have names. And that's a large part of the Pro Bowl, right? Tyrann Mathieu, hasn't. I don't know if he's been one of the best safeties in especially in the AFC, but he's Tyrann Mathieu. And then Creed Humphrey, I think everybody just is seeing the stat of just being PFF's number one center. So it's like, oh, I got to vote for that guy. It's Patrick Mahomes. It's Travis Kelce. It's even Frank Clark, right? Even if he's not playing well, he's Frank Clark. Everybody knows who he is. So the Chiefs have a ton of names, and they've obviously been in Super Bowls the last couple of years. I'll roll with it over.
I mean, I also think, the Pro Bowl to me is not, it's a nice invite, but I feel like the All-Pro honors are much more important to these players. The Pro Bowl, they sit out all the time. I mean, if you're playing late in the postseason, you're not going to be in there. So I feel like the All-Pro would be much more honorable for these teams. But, yeah, definitely, I'm in agreement with you here. I think it's going to be the over. I could see more so 7 or 8. I mean, guys like Frank Clark may get in, Harrison Butker, maybe Tommy Townsend with the hair. He can punt it and he can throw it. I mean, a lot of options you could go there with Kansas City, but I think they'll represent very well in the Pro Bowl this season. That wraps up another edition of Almost Entirely Sports on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, filling in for Josh Briscoe alongside Rudy Salazar. Coming up next, we have Freddie and Fitzsimmons right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.